Round two, take two.
He doesn't do anything?
No, it's a sorry, Cap.
Any thug can kill. I want you to take your ego out of the equation.
And I don't want any third-rate rent-a-thug who couldn't cut it as a cop in Chicago bringing him to L.A. on some bullshit local charge.
Hippies and yippies alike fill the streets, waging a war of peace against Mayor Daley's thugs.
Mugs, pugs, thugs, nitwits, halfwits, dimwits.
But Bud White is a valuable officer.
White's a mindless thug.
Oh, hell yeah, they got robbers, thugs, drug dealers, right, you name it.
Thug life.
Did you fucking apologize? What's the matter with you?
Listen, thug means never having to say you're sorry.
I believe in America. America's made my fortune.
When you have to shoot, shoot, don't talk. But today, if you can't, then it doesn't matter
anyway. You will never understand it, cause it happens. The personal life is dead in Russia. History has killed it. It's so cool, so hip, it's
alright. It's so groovy, it's out of sight. No bastard ever won war by dying for his country. He won it by making the other poor dumb bastard die for his country.
Now, we're here to conquer this country, haven't we? Huh? Well, with you as a god, it would take half the time and half the trouble.
Yes, I shan't argue that for you.
A giant. Giant.
Asshole. Alright. I love how the great fun vibe that we had at the end of that last show got shattered into a million fucking pieces.
I'm in a pretty good headspace here lately. Uh-huh. And, that was taking me right back, man.
Yeah. Here's what sucks about Audacity. If it's recording and the USB cable gets disrupted at all, it freezes that track. And unless you can stop, you can't copy it, you can't paste, you can't move, you can't export anything. You have to be able to stop it. And it freezes to where it has the whole track there, but it won't let you stop.
Don't disrupt the USB in Audacity. Don't cross the stream.
That's precisely
important
what it
safety
is.
Tip. Thank you.
Yes. All right.
God! It's like almost getting hit by a truck. That's how that feels like.
Well, I was outside and going in my car and an 18-wheeler went an inch from my nose.
I will say, thankfully we're doing the two mic setup because all we've got now. Last week was a show that sounded weird.
Yeah.
Not a show that was awesome and lost.
Yes.
Because if that was lost...
How many did we do? Two whole shows and then we had to do a third one?
Yeah.
I don't know if that was four, but the first one, oh man, you'll never hear a show like that.
Yeah.
Ever. It was the best show ever.
Yes.
Ever.
But literally, as I went to hit stop at 57 minutes, I looked down... God... I looked down and saw it freeze, and I went, oh, man. And I didn't say any more than that, and no. Campbell just you have got to be shitting me. And I was like,
please be shitting me.
You were like, is he going to get some cheese?
And you think he wants some cheese?
Yeah,
oh,
that's...
my chicken and stars.
And we're back!
Yeah.
First off, I really, at this point, we are recording this, just so you guys know, and I'm up front, we are still day of the release of Tron. We've just finished recording the other show moments ago, and now we're recording the next one, so I have no idea what last week's show sounds like yet.
He's wearing a Tron shirt.
Yes, I'm...
He's become the biggest Tron mark ever.
Yes, I've got fucking... I'm covered in glow-in-the-dark strips and a big fucking bodysuit.
He's painted blue stripes on his bike, and he keeps running into the wall of his apartment. It won't go up the wall! It won't change direction!
You're like, why is...
Clarkson, you lied to me!
Why is fat Cary Elwes in his apartment riding a bike? God damn!
That's a funny image.
It really is. It really, really is. And I just...
we have fun.
I'm not trying to say that I'm as attractive as Cary Elwes. I'm just saying Cary Elwes got tired of being that attractive and decided to eat and drink everything, and now he looks like me. Like, Cary Elwes got fucked by Oliver Reed, and they had a baby.
Are you saying you'd be the prodigy of that
I'm saying
union?
That I would be the prodigy of the progeny. The prodigy of you'd the Firestarter. Right. There's the Firestarter. Yes, that's what I would
be. You would be an Electro...
I would be the
product of that union.
I would be the ass baby of those two, yes. So.
Anyway.
Kids movies. No. This one's going out to my nephew. I'm sorry. I love that kid so much, it's fucking stupid.
Good. And what a better way to segue into our favorite movies from Vivid Video.
Wow. I was going to go with Wicked, but.
Okay. Yes.
Evil Angel. How about we do epics?
All right. Epics from Vivid Video.
Epics from Vivid.
Well.
I just am so chock full of not giving a fuck at this moment. Okay. I am still... You're right. It's like almost getting hit by a truck. Almost having something terrible happen. And you're in that weird state of, afterwards. Right. You just want to throw shit. But, So, I actually... My list for this is epics... Other than Lawrence of Arabia?
You just do yours and I'll throw my three in.
Okay, because I think we've got some good shit to go with on my end, at least. We'll have to talk about Lawrence on this, because doing a show without talking about... Doing an epic show without talking about Lawrence of Arabia is like doing a show about shit you're too old for without mentioning Tron.
Right.
I'm just enjoying being the asshole right now. Yeah, it's kind of fun. So let's see.
Tattoos, you can be me. I do it all the time.
Yes. A few more tattoos.
More tattoos. Yeah. That's right. That's right.
Yeah, I'm slightly...
I'm sorry.
I'm slightly inked.
Yeah, you are.
So, what we're looking at here are just epic films. And I think the question we have to go into before we discuss epics is what really makes it an epic film?
Something being epic.
Yes. Is it...
That's the first ingredient.
Is it length? Is it size of production? Is it... The amount of time...
Scope of story?
Scope of story. Is it the amount of time that transpires through the movie? Mm. And,
No, because then Highlander would be an epic.
Yeah, that's true.
It isn't.
Yes, that's true.
A documentary filmed in real time.
In real time. The thing is, I think that Highlander just dabbles in those different times, but I think if they took time to develop them through those years, it could be slightly more of an epic.
Oh, well, certainly.
Yeah. But regardless... I'm going to throw out the first... Have you ever seen or heard of Alexander Nevsky?
It rings a bell.
Old Soviet film. If there was ever... The Cold War did one thing that bothers me greatly. And that is, if you are not an adamant student of film, you have absolutely no idea of how vitally important Russia is to the development of film as an art form. Mm-hmm. Because were it not for Lev Kuleshov and Sergei Eisenstein in Russia, editing, as we know it, doesn't exist.
Oh, wow.
Like, Tarantino, there's a documentary called The Cutting Edge, The Art of Movie Editing.
Awesome.
And Tarantino says,
If not for Tron.
Yes, if not for Tron. Oh, would it were for Tron. He said, "If you know, we've got all this stuff happening in Hollywood, and then these crazy fucking Russians start doing this shit, and it's true. The Russians did so much where, if we put this image and then cut to this image, those two together will have an emotional effect on the audience." Mm-hmm. So it's the way you combine images and play it together. Nevsky was this epic story of like a battle in Russia that ended up taking place on a frozen lake that is just this masterful fucking piece of filmmaking, and it happened so early on. And I think it's the first non-American epic, because, you know, D.W. Griffin was pissing people off with Birth of a Nation and then weakly trying to make up for it with Intolerance. Mm-hmm. But there's a brilliance to the old... The Russians... It's odd. When you look at some of the Russian stuff, it's very art schooly. Mm-hmm. Like, they really fucking went for it. But,
Like Solaris.
Solaris, yeah.
Of course, that was a lot later on.
Yes, a little.
A lot later on, actually.
I tried to watch Solaris. When it got to the scene where it was the camera pointing out the front of the car, that went on for like 5 minutes.
Actually, your emotional reaction, that's what they're going for.
Yeah, like...
How can we make them crazy?
Yeah, what is it like living in Moscow? Well, it's an endless highway.
It's very long and cold. Mm. Like space.
Yes. Yes. Ooh, this reminds me of one movie that's not going to be on my list. And I'm going to give a reason why, and it could have been.
Fantastic Four, The Rise of the Silver Surfer.
Yes. Only because they didn't have a purple-suited man as Galactus. If they just had some guy with a big handlebar...
Damn you!
...spittoon helmet.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Sons of bitches. We needed some lavender and purple... A big dude standing outside. I'm with your planet. That's how Galactus talks in my world.
Well, hello.
Hello. Oh, lordy lord, I'm going to eat Africa.
You know what would have made him work? Is if it was Omar playing Galactus.
And are you going to eat the planet? Oh, indeed.
How do, Earth? Don't eat me. Oh, indeed. And then he eats the planet. It's awesome.
Well, there you have it. That would be the best movie ever.
Pit beef.
Yep.
Pit beef. I'm not going to mention Once Upon a Time in America. And there's a specific reason. Have you seen it?
Yes.
I want to like that movie, and your face tells me you have the same feeling for the same reason. De Niro's character, and I'm not even going to say this, when De Niro's character rapes Elizabeth McGovern, I stopped caring about that movie entirely. Because I didn't care about the protagonist anymore. Mm. I wanted him to die. And I had a friend who tried to give this very artistic, like, no, because he'd been so brutalized in prison. And I was like, I don't care. I have an irrational
response to this.
Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm. You do, totally.
And it killed that movie for me. And it got me because up to that point, I was like, this thing is amazing. And then that happened, and I was like, okay.
Hmm.
Well, I have to keep watching now just to see if this guy dies. Because I wanted him to die.
Yeah.
I just wanted him to fucking die. So, That being said, I think we should talk about, so far as length goes, possibly the most epic of all epics. Das Boot.
You said it.
Isn't there like a 12-hour cut of it?
I bought... Well, the longest one I could find on DVD, I got it from my friend Sam for Christmas one year, or his birthday.
Right.
And he was like, oh my God, it's the whole thing, we should watch that someday. Yeah, man, we'll do that.
Never did.
Yeah. And the key word, day. We should watch that some day. Not some after, no, we're going to have to pack a lunch. Mm. We're going to need some pit meat. Sam.
We're going to need the Nittany Lions.
Pit beef sandwiches, some strawberry quick,
and and some methamphetamine.
Some methamphetamine to get through this. Yeah. And what's weird about it is Hope doesn't like... She invests herself and empathizes so much with characters that she can't take movies that end sad. She almost fucking beat me to death after Harold and Maude. She almost fucking murdered me. I looked over and her face is puffed up crying.
Schindler's List is right out.
And she was like, why did you do that to me? But we were talking about it and I said, yeah, Clarkson and I had a shared reaction. And you're going to love her for this. I said, yeah, Clarkson and I had a shared reaction when we were watching Beer Fest when that guy popped up and I said, oh, and he was, and it was, and she goes, yeah, Jürgen Prochnow now. And I went, what? Because you and I simultaneously said, is that Jürgen Prochnow now?
Sure is.
And I'm like, no one else said that. She immediately, I said, how do you know that? Oh, I love Das Boot. And I was like, what? Wait a minute.
She loves Das Boot?
You won't let me show you Harold and Maude again, but you like Das Boot?
Had a bad experience once.
And she's like, I had come to it on my own terms. I was like, you're going to come to that black eye on my terms now. How dare you? I didn't hit her. She hit me for suggesting
such a
ludicrous thing. She beat 7 shades of shit out of me for even making that joke. But, Das Boot, that's one that's almost too long, but it has to be that long.
Yeah.
Because if you're not feeling the claustrophobia,
yeah,
that movie's failed.
Yeah.
You have to feel the debt, like, this is awful. Why is this happening to these poor Nazis? Oh, okay. I'm strangely all right with all of this now. Yeah, masterful. But that is what an epic should be. We're going to take as much time as humanly possible. Not as necessary, but as much time as possible.
Right.
To tell you this story. We're gonna make sure you feel this. But yes, Das Boot.
Absolutely.
Brilliant. Another really good one. Speaking of movies that take their time and really stretch. Do you think Heat counts as an epic? I think it fits as a crime epic.
Yeah.
Because there's way too much story going on for it not to be.
As much as a crime story can be an epic, yes.
Yeah. Because they definitely... That's one... What I remember thinking about it the first time I saw it was, that's more of a novel than a movie. Because they don't introduce a character when they're necessary to the story and then get rid of them. It's, we introduce a character where their story starts...
Yeah.
At some point, he becomes part of the full story, and then we carry it through until his story
ends.
Well,
I say that, but Godfather.
I was going to... Godfather 2 is the next one we're going to mention.
Yeah, that...
Godfather 2 is the epic in that. 1 is nice, 2 is the epic.
Yeah.
But Heat... And then talk about an epic gunfight.
Yeah.
Holy shit! I remember seeing that in the theater, and just... When those rifles start going, and you can hear the... The casings hit the floor.
Mm-hmm.
I want to go back to the first time I saw that, just so I can be blown away by it. But what's weird is, as grand a scope as it all is, it's done so quietly, hoo-hawing and great-assing and doggies aside, it's still told really, really well.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Heat, I think, counts that way.
Yeah, and then Godfather 2.
Godfather 2, the... De Niro was so masterful in that.
Yeah.
Incredible. And the scenes that were cut from those movies, when you put it all together, like when he goes to visit that the friend of his that got him into the olive oil place when he was younger, Genko Abandando.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When he's dying, there's a scene from that from the first movie where he's like, Don Corleone, I want you next to me when I die.
Right.
Because then God will be afraid. And he'll let me, like...
Wow.
Awesome. But yeah, Godfather 2, that, it spans so much space and so much time, and the themes are so huge. I mean, and just everyone involved in that, I don't think has been better in anything ever. Pacino, definitely not. I'm a huge fan of Cazale. Oh,
of course.
And... To me, he is the most overlooked in those movies, because Fredo is the most wildly, I think, relatable character in that. Because he's the guy who just, for some reason, just isn't good enough.
Yeah.
All he wants is for Dad to say, yeah, you're smart, you're great, all that, but no.
No.
He just can't get that.
I'm smart!
I'm not! It should have been me! And I will give, that has my favorite Pacino acting moment, and that was the Banana Daiquiri, just because of the way he's looking at his brother and that...
Smiling.
That absolute affection that you see, like, man, he really...
You say Banana Daiquiri. Banana Daiquiri.
But he's got that look, like, that's... That's how a brother looks at that brother he hasn't seen in a while, where it's like, man, this is what I've missed about you, Fredo.
Right.
Oh, I wish we could have more of this.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Strasburg.
Oh, Rick. Absolutely.
I enjoy watching football in the afternoon.
Smaller piece. Make sure everyone gets to see the cake.
It's a masterclass in every aspect of filmmaking.
Yeah.
The writing, the pacing, the delivery of lines. I hate that Strasburg is so overlooked from that film, because that is what classical acting is. It's, no, you're just there. You're just a person.
He's really in the moment. They always talk about that.
Yes.
And it's easy to make fun of nowadays because people do it so ham-fistedly, mm-hmm. or so it seems compared to him.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that's what you meant. You mean everyone should act like you?
Yes.
We can't, Lee.
We don't have that. When he walks into the room where he's, you know, watching football in the afternoon, the way he's sitting in that chair.
He moves the chair over.
But
he turns down the television.
Still.
Oh, she turns down the
television. But still has the body posture of a guy watching football.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, because, you know, every movie he'd have to change and get into it with each other. But no, I'm watching football and talking to you. I'm not talking to you and watching football.
Yeah.
And there's a difference, and it fits, because Hyman would watch football and talk to Michael. I ain't shutting the fucking game off.
Yes. He enjoys it so much in the afternoon.
But then when he starts talking about Mo Green, Mo Green came out, he had a dream, and
that
just
dream was Las Vegas.
Fucking subtext and...
Oh, yeah.
God. But that is the grandiosity of storytelling that doesn't feel grandiose. I mean, Godfather 2 is a deceptive epic.
Yes.
Because there's no denying that's a fucking epic.
No.
But does it feel epic?
Themes are epic, but it doesn't feel like, okay, I'm watching
exactly
The Man Who Would Be King, which is an epic, but it's like, it's hitting you in the neon signs.
Uh-huh.
Epic. Look at its epicness. Behold its largeness.
The largeness of this film. Rah.
Yes.
But, and the beauty to me of all of it is how it ends.
Yeah.
Michael sitting by himself. It reminded me of how The Shield ended.
Yeah.
You are now in your version of hell. You love your family. All you ever wanted was the best for them. How are you going to end your life? Sitting alone in a room surrounded by you.
Yeah, yeah.
And what's the last thing Michael wants is to be surrounded by him.
Yeah.
And just... But really... Does anyone out there... Can anyone out there tell me a weakness in Godfather 2? Not enough Lee Strasberg?
There's it.
That's it. That's all.
I would have liked to have seen the cake more, Lee.
We got it. We got a shot.
That's not his fault,
though. Yeah, it's not. That's
production.
Frankie.
It's all production.
It's Ford Coppola and his editor.
In that same mode of epicness... Is Good, Bad, and the Ugly an epic?
Yes.
Or is it just, because of the way it's filmed, say, epic? Or is it just a long story?
If a massive Civil War battle scene where a bridge blows up can get lost in the middle of your film, it's an epic.
No. Yeah, okay.
It's a fucking epic. That's on my list. I'm sorry, what in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly isn't epic? The massive vistas, the hugeness of the story, but...
that's what I mean. I mean, it
uses the Civil War as a distraction for a heist. There's nothing more epic than that. My old roommate Lee quotes his favorite.
Strasburg?
Line. Yes, Lee Strasburg. Lee Smiley Strasburg. He used to throw out, "Son of a thousand fathers, each one a bastard like you." Eli Wallach, UT graduate.
Really?
Yes, That's where he learned to ride horses.
I'll be damned.
Yeah, And now he got, like, one of the Lifetime Achievement Awards from the Oscars.
About horse riding?
Fucking time. Yes, for horse riding.
Huh.
It's the little-known equestrian Oscar. The Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Equestrian Sciences.
I got it.
Yes, it's brilliant. But no, Good, the Bad, and the Ugly qualifies beyond epic to me. Okay. I mean, it's an epic in the most epic... The most epic genre, the West. I mean,
is
there anything that's more expansive than that? And something that Ebert has an essay in the re-release of that, where he talks about his review, his original review, and he said, I looked at it and I realized I wrote a 4-star review for a movie I gave 3 stars to. And I did it because in my mind I was being high-minded and I was like, well, it's a Western. But
Tisk, yeah, Tisk,
Tisk. He's able to acknowledge that.
Well, that's good.
And so I give him credit there, but man, yeah. And Leone can do huge better than anyone. Can do just the massiveness.
Yeah.
And that... We got to do a cowboy picture. Actually, we're going to end up having to do like 2 or 3 cowboy picture shows because I won't do a Western because I will not lump spaghetti Westerns in with
Ford.
Ford.
Right.
And I won't lump Ford in with the more modern stuff. There's right. There's too many things happening
yeah.
there.
Yeah, yeah.
But definitely Leone, it's the way he interplays the themes on that.
Yeah.
So the only movie that I will even put close to Good, the Bad, and the Ugly for a spaghetti Western is Great Silence.
Now, that's a good one.
That, but it doesn't count as an epic.
No,
no. Stay away from that now. But
it is good.
They use a battle scene to distract from a theft.
Yeah.
Wallach is so good in it, but he gets so overshadowed by the others. It's funny. I remember watching Mystic River with Lee
mm-hmm.
Smiley. Strasburg.
Right.
And the scene where Eli Wallach is in the drugstore and the liquor store and he's telling him about the robbery. Yeah. And I was like, oh shit, Eastwood directed this.
Yeah.
And Lee was like, oh, and how cool that was. And like, you know, if Van Cleef was alive, they could have fit him in there. But yeah, they don't have the balls to make a Western that big. They don't have the balls to make a movie that
they grandiose. Didn't have any idea that you couldn't do that.
Yes. Yeah.
They just did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Leone was like, we'll see what we can. We'll just do more.
Yeah.
Just put more in it. We'll be fine with this. Speaking of, Once Upon a Time in the West, does that count as an epic? Because it's got a lot of the grand scale and it's dealing with some epic themes, but does it really count in that school?
I don't know. That's a personal story going on with...
Mm-hmm. But it's weird because it's showing the intersection of personal narrative with the grander narrative of, like, the birth of a nation, the development of that, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah, it fits. It really does.
Got an epic name.
It really does. And, boy, talk about the most appropriate name. The original thought, you know, at the beginning where it's Woody Strobe and Jack Ellum? And
yeah.
You know what the original idea for that was, right?
Yeah.
It was going to be Van Cleef, Eastwood, and Wallach.
Oh, cool.
But, like, I think Eastwood wasn't available. So they said, no, if we can only have 2 of them, then we're just not doing it. Mm-hmm. But how cool would it have been to start off with those 3 facing down Charlie Bronson?
Right.
That would have been like the Expendables.
Like, right.
They got all of them together?
Right.
And, of course, in that, Charlie Bronson probably would be the one walking away. Charlie Bronson v. Clint Eastwood would be rough, but Charlie... like,
gotta go with Charlie Bronson on that one.
Well, because Eastwood had, like, a code that, you know, Charlie didn't.
No.
Not no. Well, Charlie had a code of honor, but when it came to fighting, no dice.
No dice.
It's happening, baby.
Going down to Emmett's Fix-It Shop to fix Emmett.
He's so good. And, yeah, that's... Charlie Bronson would have leveled him. But I think...
Real Charlie Bronson would have killed him.
Yeah. He's... Oh, God, yes.
In real life.
The opening sequence alone, I think, qualifies this as an epic. Just how long is it dead silent?
Mm-hmm.
With just that rusty hinge.
Mm-hmm.
And then Woody Strode taking that little drink of water from his hat.
Yep.
And Jack Ellum Elluming the hell out of that. I don't know if there's ever been that much Ellum anywhere.
Just the master character actor.
Yes. Like, what do you want me to do here, Sergio?
Not since his turn in The Girl from Lover's Lane.
Yes. Yes. What I love is I can imagine Sergio going, you know, well, Sergio, what do you want me to do here? Can you look creepy?
Well,
I don't know.
I'll do my best.
Really fantastic.
Yeah.
But yeah, Once Upon a Time in the West, and kudos to Fonda.
Oh, yeah.
For taking that chance. I mean, later, because who do we have today? I think I might have asked you this before. Who do we have today that is on that level of nice guy?
Tom Hanks.
Hanks, yeah, Hanks.
And he did his
sort of version like that in Road to Perdition, but he still was a nice enough guy.
Oh, yeah,
in
he
Road
was still the nice guy.
Yeah. That it,
no, you didn't buy him as a killer.
No, it's just like, no. Fucking Chevy Chase needs to come back as a serial killer. I mean, as a hitman.
Yeah.
He does do a hitman movie. This is Mark Clapp's idea, not mine.
Okay.
I think that could work.
But like,
now he's back in Community, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Well, nowadays, no actor would have the balls to do what Fonda did in that.
No.
And the first scene he's in, he kills a child.
Yeah.
Well, now you said my name.
Yeah.
And the way that was shown was so brilliant.
Yeah.
Just a shot and the breaking of, like, you didn't see it. She didn't have to, because we didn't need to shock people with
correct.
That. Just let it be there. But yeah. And Robards. Fuck. Standout. I mean, who is the standout performance in that movie?
Yeah.
Everyone. Oy. Oy, oy, oy. We've got those two down. I know that I have a lot more here, so we're
just
gonna
go. This worked well last time.
How about, have you ever seen Reds?
No.
Warren Beatty.
Yeah. No, I haven't seen it.
I will give you an idea how good this movie is. It was on 2 VHS tapes, and I got it from I Love Video back in the day. And I put in one of the tapes and started watching, and I just got sucked in and was fully involved with the story. Then when it reached the end of the tape, the fucking closing credits started to roll.
You watched the second tape
I put the second tape in first.
Wow.
But the second half, the story was so well told, I didn't miss anything.
Wow.
Yeah, there were details that were missing that I picked up on the second watch. But no, it immediately, I was just like, wow. Because what they were doing was jumping back and forth between the historical side of it and interviewing people that were actual communists back at that time, discussing what life was like. And it was really brilliant. But Beatty at the, it ends up being one of those things where he's, you know, he's a true believer. He's not some evil, he just thinks this is what's right.
Yeah, sure.
But he goes to Russia to help, and he gets the fucking ass end of it and realizes the problem with that system is he's like, well, I need to
human
go back.
Nature?
No, well, no, he's like, I need to go back, you know, to my wife. And they were like, no. No, you should be willing to sacrifice that part of your life to help out here.
Yeah.
And just what it took from him.
Yeah.
And that, it was so touching. It was so well done. I mean, Beatty is an amazingly good filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
There's no two about that. The guy's really good. And this is the best thing he's done.
Wow.
And it just sort of presents the story. It doesn't beat you over the head with the politics or tell you what's right or wrong. It just shows you a life story.
Right. And well, that's the way it should be.
Exactly. And it's done so well.
There's no one plugging their hair into trees?
No.
Okay.
There isn't. It took me a second. I was like, what in the fuck are you talking
about? I fucking understand what you're doing to the earth, man.
Yeah. Oh, oddly, neither Avatar nor Titanic are on my list.
Huh.
Nor is the mashup that I made Avatanic. That just came to me, and I said, I got to put that out there for you.
Top of the tree, Mom!
Top of the tree. Yes, I made, like, it's an epic 90-hour version that it repeats some things, but you need to see them.
Yeah.
Yes, Avatanic, coming soon to a theater near you.
That's brilliant.
In real D3D.
Indeed.
Indeed. But go with that. Okay, this is one I saw in the theater, and it's one that frustrates the shit out of me. Have you seen A Thin Red Line?
No.
That movie is really, really good, but also
Terrence Malick?
Yeah. It's like a 3-hour version of a 9-hour movie.
Oh, okay.
Because, I mean, there are massive swaths that were just cut out. There are actors whose entire roles were cut out. Because Malick kind of just goes off. He films whatever the fuck he wants for as long as he wants. I mean, there's a reason the man's made, what, like 3 movies?
Yeah.
And they've been good. The new one is the tree or trees.
World tree.
Trees of world and
tree of life.
Avatree.
Is it tree of life?
It's Avatree. Avatreanic.
Train with wolves.
Yes, train. Yes,
that's what coon dogs
yes.
do.
Where the wild trees are.
That's it.
Hunter talked about meeting him once and like. Picking him up for some film society thing, and he said he was driving along. He's like, he's the most laid back guy ever, and he's like, oh, Memphis is a lovely town. You're
Your town fathers definitely had foresight.
Wow!
Like, just, I am amazed at how lovely
Savannah's shadows are longer than any other town.
What? It was like he told me, meeting Alan Alda, and this is going off topic, but I think it's cool. Going out to eat with Alan Alda for this thing, Alan Alda only wants to talk about one thing.
Mephisto Waltz.
Yes. No, actually, all he wants, you. Clarkson what? Campbell.
Well, he played has, a guy named Clarkson in Mephisto Waltz.
He has people watching you.
I knew it.
Yes. But no, he said no matter what you try and talk to, like, oh, I really loved you in MASH. Oh, that's great. So what do you do? Like, no, so what do you, like, he is so mm-hmm. genuinely interested in you.
Or really good at acting like
good at, yes. Good at, but that's kind of cool that's when cool. you meet somebody who's like, I'm even going to put forth the effort of pretending.
Right.
But,
like salespeople do.
Yes. Like I do.
Get a,
every day.
Get them talking about themselves.
Yes. Well, go on. Tell me more.
Yes.
No, Thin Red Line, you got to see it. Just because Nick Nolte has the... He is so much... So Nolte. Nolte. Like, you can take a goddamn hill! he says goddamn so beautifully. He goes, when I tell you, you're going to take the goddamn hill, you take the goddamn hill! And I just kind of morphed pretty into Nolte there for a second. There. Yeah. Though not just vocally, but my face just went... And I grew a mustache. It was...
And that's something.
And then it went away.
Right.
As soon as I stopped, it was like, wait a minute, this is Jim. He got no business holding a mustache up here. Let's run away. Ooh, speaking of war epics, I don't want to hear that you're holding the line. Yes. I want to hear that you're advancing.
Yes.
You know, he is... When you look down into a pile of goo that used to be your best friend's face, you'll know what to do. George C. Scott as Patton.
Oh, yeah.
And I will say...
Grab him by the nose! Shake him in the ass!
Shake him in the ass! Carl Malden as Omar Bradley overlooked greatly.
Yeah, yeah.
But I have an affinity for Omar Bradley because he was so loved by the men.
Yeah.
You know, he was referred to as the general, the G.I. General.
Right.
Because he connected so well. And, I mean, he was a 5-star general. You gotta... But...
Yeah, some...
And then when it got down to the... Like, when he beat that kid up, and then later he's like, if I'd have known, I would have hugged that kid. Like, that's why you don't have cameras on the front, because you do shit like that, where it's like, no, you're in the military, damn it. Your feelings don't matter. Go right. do your job. My father is hilarious when we talk about the military, and people say... Well, you know, what about their constitutional rights? My dad's like, you don't have constitutional rights in the military. You sign those away.
Right.
And I didn't understand. I was like, what? He goes, yeah, Uniform Code of Military Justice. Oh. You are not protected by the Constitution in the military. And you sign a form that says no war. Yes. Like, that's why they can tell you where to live. They can't. They don't ask you where to live. Right. They tell you
where to live. You are stationed here.
Mm-hmm.
Not asked.
But what I like so much about George C. Scott is that he didn't... It's not that he said the Oscars, fuck that. He's like, I'm not competing. I'm making a movie. I'm creating something.
a thousand blank stares
yeah.
in all California.
Yeah.
It's what? Like,
I'm not going to go to the Oscars. I just... And it's not that I say it's meaningless. I'm just, you know, I'm not going. I'd rather spend time with my family. And Goldie Hawn gave the award that year. Because... She won it for Cactus Flower, so I believe it was her that gave it. Yeah. And she goes, and the winner is, oh my God, George C. Scott. That is testament to the power of that. Because the Academy tends to take itself slightly more serious than most people.
What do you mean?
They tend to perhaps have a little bit of gravitas.
I'm unclear.
You have to be there
really, okay.
to get it. That they were willing to say, you know what, forget about all that. Yes, he's not here, but God, can we deny this performance?
Yeah. Now they could.
Yeah, now, oh God.
They
could
have a way to.
Now they would. But yeah. back then, you look at that, and seriously, is there any competition at all?
Yeah.
No, I mean, Jesus. George C., I miss it. He steals every movie he's in. I mean, The Hustler, to me, that's more his movie than Paul Newman's, just because of how he is with it. I mean, Dr. Strangelove, he steals scenes from Peter Sellers.
And that is thirsty work.
Well, and I stand by, to me, the funniest the phone call to the Russian premiere. Hello, oh. Dmitri. Oh, you're
Dmitri.
Fine. And I'm fine. And everybody's fine. Well, one of our pilots went a little cuckoo. How do you think I feel about this? Well, of course I do. Of course I do. But what's great is they cut to George C. Scott sitting there with a gum in his mouth, looking up. Like, what the hell is going on here? Right. It's so fucking good.
Such a masterpiece.
But as Patton, I mean, it goes so into the mind behind the... What does it take to get a generalship, much less multiple stars? Yeah. The singularity of purpose necessary to become a one-star general is baffling.
Yeah.
To get up to three or four, fuck!
Yeah.
And my dad has worked on... when he was in the Air Force, worked on a lot of, you know, had a lot of different jobs, you know, different jobs, different positions. And he sat in on staff meetings with generals. And he said, it's the funniest thing you'll ever see in your life. Because you'll have a general say something like, okay, I have an idea. Nobody do anything. This is just an idea.
Right.
What do you think if we did this? Because if he doesn't say that, you could say, you know, I was driving through base today. Why isn't there a stop sign at this corner? You know, could we look into that? By the time he's on his way home, there's a fucking stop sign there. It's like, do it. General said, do it. Do it.
Right.
But to hit just single stars, crazy. Four stars, there is a... It goes beyond obsession. It's almost compulsive to get that far into it. And he embodies that perfectly. You cannot have anything else in your life to reach that point.
Yeah.
You just can't. Now, add to that he fucking looked just like him.
Yeah.
That was some creepy shit. And that's Jeff, my friend Jeff on our I'm Done With You list, when he said he didn't like biopics in general because most of the time you're just seeing a, you know, 2-hour long imitation.
Right.
Which 90% of the time is true.
That's true. Most of the time, yeah.
Like, Jim Carrey came sort of close as Andy Kaufman, but even then it was just watching a really good impression.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I didn't feel like I was watching an impression. That was some creepy voodoo transmogrifying going on with Mr. Scott. He just fucking became that guy.
Yeah, I knew that before I even... Mm-hmm. My dad has a bunch of books on presidents and generals and all that, and Patton being... Yeah. He's got... three or four books on it.
Right.
Before I knew anything about Patton.
Mm-hmm.
Even when I did learn about Patton, it was George C. Scott in my head.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Oh, you magnificent bastard! I read your book!
Yeah.
Oh. But do we, other than, Daniel Day-Lewis. You hear he's playing next?
No.
Abe Lincoln. Oh, that expression.
Oh, yes.
Yes. And people are like, should a Brit play? Yes.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
He should.
A Brit.
I would be okay with him playing me. If there was a director who wrote a part specifically for me.
He could play Desmond Tutu. Okay?
Yes. Yes. Like, seriously, if they had done Invictus and Morgan Freeman wasn't available and they said, and Daniel Day-Lewis as Morgan Freeman.
As Morgan Freeman, as Mandel.
And here's the thing, he wouldn't do it in makeup. He would get so into character that his skin would change color. That's how good Daniel Day is.
He has powers.
Daniel Day-Lewis, there could be a director. Scorsese could have a part written specifically for me. For me, with me in mind, everything about it.
Right.
And then call me like, hey, are we going to pay you this much? Like, awesome. Then the next day say, Day-Lewis found out about it. He wants to play it. I'd say, well, you know... Hey, give the man, indeed.
Absolutely.
I think that's, but jumping back to, what were we talking about?
Patton.
Playing, I didn't feel at any point like I was seeing a performance.
You're watching a possession.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. He just transformed. Yeah. And it was so amazing, man. Yeah. I mean. What more can you say? Saying George C. Scott is good in something is like saying Ben Kingsley's good in something.
Right. That's not Blood Rain.
Yeah. No shit, he's good in it. Which leads me perfectly to Gandhi.
Is that how we segue?
Yes, you like that?
Yes.
Have you seen Gandhi?
Of course.
Quite impressive.
My best friend growing up was Indian.
Oh, yes. Anant Kumbhar. Yes. Yeah. I liked it because it was his first movie.
Really?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yes. He was a stage actor. They said, oh, we'll take a chance with him.
I'll see what he can do.
We'll go for that. Why not? It was kind of like Amadeus. Well, this Abraham fellow hasn't done much in the way of movies, but he's quite good in the play. Let's put him in this.
Right.
Which I think, does Amadeus count as an epic?
Well, it's certainly shot as an epic.
We'll discuss that in a second. We'll finish Gandhi, then talk about Amadeus. Gandhi, I still joke with Hope about this because apparently there's some unseemly... There's an unseemly side to the Mahatma where apparently Hope found out, like, Hope's like, no, he was a creepy pervert. And so my joke is now I have replaced Hitler with Gandhi in any time. Like, yeah, he's like Gandhi, isn't he?
Leaving the caste system and getting, keeping it in his robe.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
But an amazing man. I mean, absolutely sure. Amazing man. And the performance. Can you... If you picture Kingsley and Gandhi next to each other from that, could you tell who's who? Well, yes, but
yeah,
it's still quite striking.
Yeah.
And man, talk about getting into it.
Yes. Again, another possession.
Oh, and that had one of my favorite discussions when they opened fire on that group. And they go, we offered help to any who applied. And the guy looked at him, how is a child whose parents have just been shot apply for assistance? And the look on his face, like, oh.
Well, I admit it.
Bullcock, sir. That's a guy who's so British he shits the queen.
Yeah, right.
And there he is, just, well, I'm not quite sure what to say. Masterful.
Yeah.
Masterful. I mean, seriously. So let's divert back to Amadeus. You know what impresses me most about Amadeus? Cinematography. It was done with natural light.
Ah, like Barry Lyndon.
Yes, exactly. Exactly like Barry Lyndon. Incredible.
Thinking and watching movies, didn't you? Didn't you, yeah. People? That's right. I've watched Gandhi and Barry Lyndon. That's all I've ever watched.
And House of a Thousand Corpses.
And House of a Thousand Corpses. It. And Devil's Rejects. But, and The Wicker Man.
Available light nowadays, you'd think they'd do more of it because digital cameras would open up to that so much. It looks so good.
Yeah.
I mean, it just, it's so intoxicating.
Yeah.
And I what I like most about Abraham in that is, first off, utter blathery bullshit so far as history goes.
Oh,
Amadeus and Salieri were like best friends.
Yeah.
They were really good. They were buddies. that Abraham thanked Tom Hulce. And he said, I would not be standing here if it was not for the amazing Tom Hulce. Hulce was so good in that.
Yeah.
And the subtleties of his performance, given how grandiose that character was and how grandiose it was, yeah. When he comes in and he plays the piece that Salieri wrote, he's like, not really a lot there. What if we were to throw... And it wasn't done as a... But it was just... What do you say? You just throw this in. And the fact that he captures that genius that, well, why wouldn't you want me to show you that?
Yeah.
You know, of course that's how it goes. I mean, you know, well.
Right.
Why wouldn't you do that? And I'm just amazed every time I see it. Just. Yeah.
I haven't seen that in a very long time. But
yeah.
I
if they do it at the Paramount's film series this summer, I'm fucking going. Because seeing that on the big screen has got to be...
Yeah, I got to get in on that.
Yes, yes. Well, the problem is this summer, the film series wasn't very strong.
What did they have?
I don't remember. A bunch of shit, and like I looked at it, and literally none of it.
Right.
And Porky's. Yeah. The year before, I went to like 6 double features.
All right.
And stayed for both parts of them, you know? Because, I get to see MASH and Catch 22.
Didn't they do
Color of Money.
Paul Newman, they did.
Cool Hand Luke and Harper.
Oh, snap.
Mm-hmm.
Harper's a wacky little film.
Oh,
too.
God, yes. And I got to watch both of them. Yeah, just sitting awesome. There going, oh, I like this.
That's excellent.
But yes, Amadeus.
Yeah.
Wow.
That is more of an epic in the way, and the story that's being told than, say, like, Gladiator is epic because it's big.
Yes. Uh-huh.
it's really just a story of this one guy and the shit that happens to him, but it's made big by what's going on.
It's made big by the action. But, like, if you want to talk about... I'll throw two movies together that I shouldn't, but I'm going to. Lawrence of Arabia and Dr. Zhivago.
Yeah, I wrote down Dr. Zhivago.
Yeah, because of the massiveness and how Zhivago does for Snow what... Arabia does for sand.
Right.
There's so much everything in the expanse, and you're going to love this. My first film history class I went through and I showed all this, showed them Westerns and ended with A Great Silence, which has Klaus Kinski in
right.
it. Kinski pops up in a scene in Zhivago, and we're watching it, and he's just in the background in one moment, and one kid in my class goes, "Hey, isn't that that guy from the Western we just watched?"
Good enough.
It's like, you just bullseyed Kinski in the background?
Yeah.
Well played, sir.
Absolutely.
But yeah, Zhivago, it's so much more personal than Arabia, which is weird. Lawrence is massive, but it's a relationship between a man and his country and the world.
Yeah.
Whereas in Zhivago, it's a relationship between a man and a woman and how the country and the world gets in the way.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how, but yet it always comes back to her.
Mm-hmm.
And God.
That movie fucking smokes.
It really does.
It's really good.
I saw that, the first time I saw that was in the 70mm screen at the Paramount.
Oh, you bastard.
Going, that looks like Omar Sharif. But
that's uncanny.
The break, the act break for the intermission ends with that guy standing on the front of the train.
Oh.
It's just like,
yeah, enjoy your iced cream. Mm-hmm.
And when it comes back, and you see it pass by, it's like, oh, that's that guy's train. I remember thinking, that's going to be that dude from earlier. And then there he was. I was like, oh,
yeah,
God, this is amazing. But Lean seemed to understand story from a different, just in such a grand way. David Lean couldn't make a 90-minute popcorn film.
No.
He couldn't.
Not well.
Yeah, exactly. Like Bridge on the River Kwai is fucking massive and epic and just wonderful.
Yeah.
And that's one that brings in such an amazing theme with Alec Guinness trying to prevent the guy from destroying the bridge at the end. It's like, he took pride in it. Like, it became his and he forgot. And it just shows that, you know, when you are doing something and your world becomes what your world is.
Yeah.
It's not, I'm no longer a British soldier. I'm the guy building this bridge, and that bridge has me in it.
Yeah.
And I can't let, a guy who's on my side do what I should have been doing the whole time.
Absolutely.
But no, those two, like, I was enamored so deeply with Lawrence that when I finally saw, like, I could have rented Zhivago on VHS, but I was like, I don't want to see it that way. Right. I don't. And it's weird because I denied myself that movie for a very long time because I was like, I just have a feeling it's not going to look right.
Right.
In this. And so finally, it came out on the big screen and I went by myself and sat there and was just like, and what was great, that trivia contest that I go to where Mark goes to every once in a while, they do movie scores every once in a while. As you know, guess what movie this is from? And the host used Laura's theme from Zhivago. Mm-hmm. And after it played, he came by and he was like, I had a feeling you were the only person here who'd get that. And I was the only person. And it played and I was like, oh! And he kind of looked over like, shit.
Only person?
It didn't even take me a second. And I was, because it's kind of an obscure one, it's one of those ones you're like, I sort of recognize that from something.
Right.
But it's one of those things that unless you're really into the movie, it's buried in your memory.
Yeah, I guess so. You're just kind of on the tip of your tongue in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Whilst having a mouthful of chicken wing.
Exactly. Can I have another waffle fry? And Laura's theme.
Yeah.
Good shit. But yeah, those two, like Lean... As anyone, it's just epic. They're synonymous.
Yeah.
Lean and epic. They mean the same goddamn thing. Have you ever seen Gallipoli?
No.
That motherfucker counts as an epic just for the... just the scope on that. It's a small story, but it's so... And yet, there are a surprising number of epics that make the British look less than favorable.
Yes.
Yes. They're really...
People have it out for the British.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. And I think that's a bit unfair at this point.
So do I.
Yes, they've done some ungentlemanly things, we'll call it.
Hey, we're America. But who, what can we say?
Yeah. Who hasn't? They've been around a long time. Damn. You know?
That's really the question is, who hasn't?
Yeah.
Assholes. Everyone get off their high horse.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Equatorial Guinea, Namibia, you're out.
Yes.
Other
yes.
than that, though.
Now, you guys get a pass on this one.
You can't gather enough to even have the sense to pour piss out of a boot.
Yeah.
So chances are you haven't done anything big and bad, like America, the spinoff of Great Britain.
The sequel. We kind of did everything with a little less...
we're the Frasier to your Cheers.
Exactly. Exactly.
Exactly like Frasier. We think we're a lot smarter than we actually are.
Yes. Oh,
in fact, we're actually just some guy who did a lot of blow.
Yeah. Is Polynesia or... Where's Mononesia?
I don't know.
Yeah. Oddly enough. Speaking of movies that make the British look less than good...
Excalibur?
I've never seen it.
You never seen it?
No.
I saw that when I was a kid, and I thought that was the biggest epic ever. Turns out it was just the Carl Orff theme. Carmina Burana. Wow, that's really big. Wait a minute, it's not big at all. This is kind of weird. That Guinevere's a real trollop. God damn it. That's why it was a French creation. Anyway, go ahead.
How about Braveheart?
That's a big one.
Yes.
That's a big one.
Shut up. That's all I'm going to say to people. That's my statement to everyone who's like, well, what about this? Shut up. Shut up. It's Braveheart. Shut up.
Shut up.
Yes, it's fucking awesome, stupid. Yeah, how's that? Yeah, exactly. It's Braveheart. I don't want to hear your jib-jab nonsense-y bullshit.
They say a lot.
Yeah.
Those people.
Well, this scene wasn't proper because of that. Shut up.
Shut up.
Oh, God. Just shut up. It's a good movie.
Sure
it's
is.
Rousing. It makes me want to put my kilt on all the fucking time.
I'm wearing mine now.
Yeah. I actually had I judged this talent show at the school where I am, and it was like, well, just try and be cool with it, blah. And I wore my utility kilt, and I was just, and this woman, one of the teachers, is like, you know, I read a lot of cheesy romance novels. They're fun. I don't care. She goes, you basically are every guy that's described in those right now, because I'm just there with this, you know, massive shoulders and the kilt and stuff, and I'm like. Yeah, pretty much. Just a giant Scandinavian-looking dude in a kilt. Like, yes, I am. Like, I can do whatever I want.
I'm exactly like the priest in Thornbirds.
Because I can caber toss, so I can do it. Yes. And I tell my students that, like, well, no, don't people make fun of you when you're wearing a kilt? I've thrown a telephone pole. I'll wear whatever I want if I'm doing that.
People our size, that usually didn't happen a lot.
I could wear a plaid
gown.
And
you're bigger than me.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But the Braveheart just, again, it's epics are only good. And I'm noticing this is a recurring theme here. The smaller the individual focus is, because, you know, you've got Patton, Story of the War, but no, we're looking at one man. You've got Zhivago, the Russian Revolution, but it's really about one man. Lawrence of Arabia, that whole thing, but it's one man. Braveheart, it's somewhat about the liberation of a country. But what I like, what it says about the Scottish is, if you fuck with my family, I will ruin your kingdom. I will. Like, you
he sacked York.
When his wife, when Modern, was about to be executed, and you see her looking.
Oh.
And what's weird is, hearing Randall Wallace talk, the guy who wrote it, he is so fucking intense and awesome. Because he will give these amazingly poetic and beautiful responses to stuff when, you know, I was lucky enough with Mel Gibson with the sequins before he was going to be, that he realized that was the Garden of Gethsemane and he knew the lighting had to block. But then somebody asks about, you know, motivations for writing characters, and he said that I was doing an interview with somebody in Japan for this movie, and through the translator, they were like, you know, what makes a man great? And I said, you're not a great man if you have a bunch of people in your life that you're willing to kill for. You're a great man if you have someone in your life that you're willing to die for. And the guy was like, yeah, he says that he wants to have a drink with you when you come to Japan because you are a samurai. Like,
oh my God.
All right. But it fits Wallace. Yes! Wallace, he has like the most laid-back vibe in the world. But you get him talking and you're like, I feel so much more enlightened just by talking to you right now. Tell me more.
Yeah.
And that he took just this grandiose, like, people don't know about this guy outside of Scotland, but here it is. Roll with it. And that was, like, part of my Scottish awakening. Because, like, you and I both kind of had the, yeah, we're Scottish, and then that movie came out, and it was like, everyone.
I got to turn around and go, see?
See? Suddenly, everyone wanted to be like, I mean, my little brother in my fraternity was an Indian kid who was doing Scottish accents all the time because he was like, no, that movie proved that's what I want to be, is Scottish. Like,
my brother and I have the proper amount of drink. Mm-hmm. Those quotes usually start flowing. And even he hadn't seen it anywhere near the amount of times I have because he has a family and things to do.
Things to do and commitments.
But he'll make it up and it sounds like it's part of the movie.
Yep.
Oh, man. Well, at least it does when you're that drunk.
I remember watching it with you once, and they were doing those sweeping shots of the Highlands, and you're like, it's such an ugly country. It's like, yeah, it's hideous.
Oh, it's hideous, isn't it?
Yeah, and then being in the Highlands, and you're like,
oh. And I got that call when you were drinking scotch on the top of a mountain. Or
I'm drinking scotch next to a Scottish castle. And you're motherfucker, why didn't I answer the
call? I'm so glad that was just a message on my machine, and I didn't actually pick up the phone. I would have broken the phone.
I'm drinking Glenfiddich, look at
it. Cocksucker! I'm an inventory. They really like you. They want more camels to come in. They're saying, why aren't you here?
I'm drinking Glenlivet that I bought at the distillery today.
Cocksucker.
Yeah, and then the day that I was drinking the Jameson's that I bought at the Jameson's distillery. You're like,
you'll know the phone call I get when you get when I call you from Scotland.
Yeah.
Hey, Jim, I'm staying.
I'm staying, yeah. Send me my shit.
Yeah.
I know you can pick the lock to get into my apartment, so do that and send me my stuff. Yeah, but Braveheart, man, I remember seeing that at I wasn't able to see it for a while when it came out. And then I saw it with my mom at a dollar theater in San Antonio. And we were both like,
yeah,
we are so awesome.
I think the first time I saw that, I saw it with our mutual friend Megan. Back in San Marcos.
Mm-hmm.
We got there late and shit, and we wound up at the old theater in San Marcos where the Hastings is now, but it's on the other side, and I don't know what it is now, but it used to be the movie theater.
Mm-hmm.
And we got in a completely packed house, and I had to see we had to sit at the very far right front row. Far right front row.
Oh.
Last two seats of the very front row. And it still had all that impact.
Yeah. Yeah.
Then we were like, you know, craned over to the side.
Oh, it's so good.
It really and then we had another mutual friend who will go unnamed who was just pissed all over it. Oh, it's just, you know, too grandiose and self-serving and blah, 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 blah. And
I'd rather go watch some Jane Campion short films that don't make sense.
Break your neck with a pipe.
Mm-hmm.
Shut up.
Yeah. That is a movie that a lot of people have turned on in the classic heel move to be cool. I don't like Braveheart because it's like, shut the fuck up.
Shut up.
Shut your fucking mouth before I step.
I don't
shut
care.
The fuck up.
Careful with the USB.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
That's why you notice that my gesticulations have gone airborne.
Well, I have a tendency to pound the table, too, so I'm...
So we'll find a way to fix that.
All right.
Yeah. But now there's actually going on with that kind of historical sweeping epic. Have you seen Red Cliff?
No, you wrote a review on that, and I said I got to put that in my queue.
Well, here's the thing that's weird about it. There's two different versions. I saw the domestic American release that Harry Knowles is like, it's unwatchable. No, it's not. It may not be as good as the other one. It's still pretty good.
It's not unwatchable, but it's not quite as good as, say, The Spirit, right, Harry?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It doesn't hold a candle to The Spirit or Fled.
Or the new Indiana Jones.
Yeah. No, not at all. Not at all. It's really solid. I liked it enough that I've got the international version, both discs coming soon.
Oh, cool.
And it's this sweeping... But what's weird is everyone in China knows it. It's like... history. It's all well-known. Like, this is the fire ship scene. And the fire ships is this huge thing that's known throughout China. It's this huge... And I'm looking at it like, that's a thing! Like, seriously, the whole deal could... totally made up, I wouldn't know. But apparently, it is. Mm. And I'm glad to see it, because I was so ready to give up on John Woo.
Yeah.
Really, really was. But man, he fucking tore the cover off that one.
Awesome.
But yeah, it's definitely worth seeing, and because it's about the Battle of Red Cliff, and it's a war movie, but it's also got this personal side to it. Mm-hmm. And it's odd because like the Chinese people have a Japanese general working with them, but it shows like totally changing these tactics and coming up with, you know, the turtle style, which when you see it, it makes so much sense. The size of some of the action scenes in it make the battle scene from Patton look like a high school play.
Holy shit.
What? The turtle scene, when you see it, you'll understand. You'll be like, oh, you were right, Jim.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
I believe you.
There are 1.5 billion people in China, and I think they had half of them for that scene. There were so many goddamn people in it.
Yeah, they paid him with half twos.
Yes, half twos. Yeah. That's all. What do you have on your list?
I have nothing more.
Nothing more? All right.
I've been working them in the conversation.
Speaking of Asian movies.
Spartacus Vikings. Okay, that's it.
Spartacus? Haven't seen it.
Haven't seen Spartacus?
Haven't seen Spartacus.
Finally. That's something that I've seen that you haven't. It's very good.
Okay.
And very big.
Very, yeah. All, the only Spartacus reference that I know is from Birdcage. Hello, I am Spartacus.
Yes.
Where I stand by Hank Azarian. I didn't really know who he was, this, aside from name on The Simpsons.
Mm-hmm.
Comes in and fucking steals the show from Nathan Lane. And,
oh, yeah, yeah.
And like two fucking like Adkins diet scenery chewers.
Yes.
And he comes in, he's like, I'm going to do something different and just be funny.
Mm-hmm.
Really good. But
the epic that is La Cage aux Folles.
Yes. Seven Samurai.
Yes.
That.
You betcha.
And can anyone use silence the way Kurosawa does?
No.
And that's...
Absolutely not.
Yeah. Talk about, like, if you want a workshop on how to use a pause... How to use atmosphere, you cannot do better than Seven Samurai.
That was one of those movies that I made myself watch because I thought, well, I've got to watch this thing because I have to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm so glad I made myself have to watch
because
I didn't want to turn it off.
Yeah.
I kept looking down going, it's almost over.
Yeah.
It's almost over.
Fuck! I need this. No, this will never be over. And the thing is, I've got like another period. I have a Stephen Chow's Chinese Odyssey. That I haven't watched. I own it on Blu-ray because they had a sale for it. And it was one of those, like, every once in a while, Harry Knowles goes flouncy fanboy on something in a way that makes me say, okay, he's not just whistling here. This might actually be good.
Well, every once in a while, you know.
And
clock's right twice a day.
Yes. And this is one of those times when the clock was right. I really dug it. I really dug what I've seen of Chinese Odyssey. So, but Seven Samurai, I saw that for the same reason every American does, because of the fucking Magnificent Seven.
Right.
Because I saw it after it was around the time Bug's Life came out, because it was like, because remember, Seven Samurai led to Magnificent Seven, led to Three Amigos, led to Bug's Life, and so I was immersed in those worlds when I finally decided one Saturday afternoon to watch it. And what I like about it is that it's a movie that you can watch in courses.
Like, yes.
I'm going to walk away for a little while. I'm going to pause it and walk away for a little while. Have a sandwich.
Pit beef sandwich?
A pit beef sandwich, yes. And then go back and watch a little more. Then go back and catch some. It's great. It's just great.
It sure is.
It's a fucking... It's a workshop.
Yeah.
In how to make a good movie, and how to make a good movie that's that big, but that small at the same time.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm noticing here. I think that we've come to a thesis almost. Epics work when they're huge, but focused down on something small. It's like a megaphone.
Exactly.
You got that little thing amped up to the whole world. And granted, there are others in there, like A Bridge Too Far and shit like that.
Yeah,
that jack it up.
You can tell when they go wrong, Major Dundee.
Yeah.
You know, because it kind of loses focus. There's nothing for the audience to really hone in on and follow through.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Obviously, these epic stories like Lawrence and Patton and Gandhi, of course, because they're one person.
Right.
But like Bridge of the River Kwai, you still have that thing because it's not necessarily about one guy, but it is.
Well, what's great about Seven Samurai, though, with this epic world is that it's an epic that is framed in the most pedestrian of settings.
Yeah.
Farm village in the middle of nowhere. And it has aspirations to go no larger than that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just here. This is where we are. This is where these people live. This is what their life is like.
Yeah.
And just breathtaking. It's so fucking good. But that being said, I'm going to glance on one, and then there's one of yours that I want to talk about more.
Okay.
Lord of the Rings kind of has to fit in here.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, not yes with any hesitance. Yes. Yes, absolutely.
And what's weird is I am on the exact opposite of everyone else. I love Fellowship. I like Two Towers. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay with Return of the King.
Return of the King.
I can only say the cliche that it has too many endings.
It has too many endings, and it just at the end, it gets so chopped up with going back and forth.
Yeah.
You have to go back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way to avoid it.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Peter Jackson could have figured out a way to not go back and forth between that battle and Frodo and Sam.
Right.
They probably would have, but how the hell do you do that?
See, once the ring is destroyed and the armies are vanquished, they needed to tie it up quicker.
Yeah.
And what was funny, Viggo Mortensen singing at the end, I was like, oh, please. No. But there was a woman on NPR, not the NPR, I think it was like Wall Street, not Wall Street Journal, New York Times or one of those, did a podcast on like pop culture blind spots, where it's like, you know, I've never seen Friday Night Lights, so I'm going to watch all of it and we can talk about it. And this girl's like, I'd never read The Hobbit.
Right.
I haven't read any of them. I own all of them. I got 50 pages into The Hobbit, and I was like, the next time I read the words buttered toast, I'm stopping.
Those books,
uh-huh.
like all those things that I read when I was growing up,
mm-hmm.
have to be read, in my opinion,
yes.
whilst growing up.
Yes.
When you have the energy and nothing else to do.
Mm-hmm.
You have a job
yeah.
and money to be made, bills to pay. You don't
yeah.
have time to devote
yeah.
to, oh good, they're having second breakfast and having another song.
Yes. And actually what she said in there, she's like, right now the song's aggravates. She's like, really, life is too short for me to read tra-la-la-la-la. Yes, it is.
Yes,
life
it is.
Is far too fucking short.
Too short to read all the Elric Melibony Bones, Melibony stories. But
Melibony
I did.
Bones. Yeah.
Melibony Bone, Melibony Bone, whatever.
But yeah, I'm not kidding. Even when I read it, I remember looking at my roommate at the time saying, if I read the fucking word, if I read the words buttered toast once more, I'm stopping. That next fucking paragraph, buttered toast. I closed it, threw it across the room, said, done. I'm fine with this. If I will die never having read this.
I remember reading The Fellowship of the Ring. I had gone through The Hobbit, and I was reading The Fellowship of the Ring, and my dad coming into the library of our home and saying, Charlie, you need to read My Friend Flicka. Why, Dad? You need to read something of an advanced level. My Friend Flick. I'm reading Tolkien.
Yeah?
I'm having this argument, like this little kid looking at my dad. I'm reading this.
Well, you need to
with
read
a dictionary Flick. Next to me, just in case I don't have, you know.
Yeah.
What do you want from me? You know, what you're doing is you're playing football. You
yeah.
need to play golf.
Yes.
To learn how to hit people.
Yeah, to learn how to hit people. What are you talking about,
what are you
old
talking
man?
About? Now, maybe read My Friend Flicka. And all I kept thinking about My Friend Flicka was, when are they going to get to the tower? You know, no.
I'll be honest with you, man. The third one, it dragged on so much at the end. And that, I know it's what everyone says, but everyone says it for a reason.
No, it's a fact.
Yeah, it's just too much. Too goddamn much.
Yeah.
But yeah,
Two Towers had more of the punch you're looking for and all,
right.
but all that. But I remember distinctly thinking, man, Fellowship is something else because it
mm-hmm.
completely captured
yes.
what I was thinking about
mm-hmm.
when I read those stories, when I read that book.
Well, it completely captured my attention and pulled me in.
I was in. They were in, you know, back of the Shire. I said, that's what the Shire looks like.
Yeah.
When they went to the Undermountain, I said, ooh, okay, this is creepy. This is exactly what I thought.
Mm-hmm.
And pictured in my head.
You shall not pass!
And, you know, you're Gandalf and you're Saint Ian.
Yeah.
So I'm like,
mm-hmm.
it's very good because yep. he's good at acting.
Oh, McKellen.
Yeah.
And that is the part he was born to play because I've said this so many times. He has the kindest eyes.
Yeah, sure.
And that fits that perfectly.
Yeah.
So the one of yours that I think deserves more than a passing glance is The Man Who Would Be King.
Absolutely.
And that is a movie you know backwards and forwards.
I've seen that movie a lot. Now,
I've said this before. You have the oddest taste in drunk movies.
I do.
Network?
Yep.
Man Who Would Be King?
Yep.
What else was in that?
Stone Cold.
Stone Cold.
Smokey the Bandit.
Smokey and the Bandit.
Cannonball Run on occasion.
Uh-huh. You're getting too normie here, man.
Something else. Last of the Mohicans.
Okay, yes. All right.
I think that about covers it.
Yes, but Man Who Would Be King, I remember...
That's one of Sam and I's go-to movie. My friend Sam, not my brother.
I remember the night that we were hanging out at your place, and I said, and you were like, Man Who Would Be King? I said, I've never seen it. And you were like, well, we're watching it now.
This giant-ass movie.
We're watching this now.
And
I just sat there going, this is fucking awesome.
Oh, it's
fucking Sean foolish. Connery being the man. Michael...
Fucking Kane.
Kane is... Brr. The bridge scene at the end.
Oh, it gets me every time. Oh. I've seen it 1,000 times.
Sober and drunk.
Yeah.
And I still get misty.
Mm-hmm.
Rules!
And then the incorporation of Kipling was so great.
Of course.
I mean, everything just... That is so...
Kipling's story.
In every level, the epic size of it. I mean, everything in that movie is massive.
And Snow Blind with... Sean Connery, Snow Blind, and Michael Caine trying to take care of him. They think they finally die. They're going to die there in the snowbank
because
the blizzard's blowing through because they can't get through the pass.
Uh-huh.
And they start telling stories about all the things they've seen. You know,
yeah,
I wouldn't trade anything for the life I had for all the money in the world. Blah blah right. blah. And they start laughing about all the things that went down with the brigadier sergeant who ran out without his hat or whatever. And they start laughing and. Causes an avalanche into the ravine that they can now cross. And it's just because these guys' friendship is led them through all this stuff. It's
right.
It's as all these other epics talk about a guy or one guy and the man who would be king,
yeah.
It really is a story of these two guys.
It's about friendship. A friendship, yeah.
And it's the ultimate buddy movie. It's the epic of buddy movies, if
yes.
you will.
Yes.
And it's fucking fabulous. I love that movie. It's one of my top five favorite movies of all time. If you haven't seen it, do yourself a favor.
Do yourself a favor and get on the fucking stick.
It's great.
Yeah. I don't know. Is there anything else that we can say here?
Other than see that movie? No.
Yeah, other than see all of this shit. Man. So, tell us about your favorite epics. Join Facebook with us, Film Thugs. We have two Facebook things. Join both of them. Why the fuck not? Check out our website. Check my shit out on Yahoo Movies Contributors. Because I'm now getting paid for Yahoo Movies.
Congrats.
Which is awesome. Thank you. Thank you very much. Here. Yeah, just put in Jim Dirks Yahoo and it'll pull it up. But yeah, check us out. All of that shit. Email us. We're there for you. Fucking send me your address and I'll send you some stickers. I want to send some stickers, damn it. We haven't sent that in a while. Yeah,
it's been a bit.
It's been a bit. Yeah. So let us know. We'll send them to you. I think next time we're going to do one on music. So, fucking buckle up for that. You got anything else to say?
Nothing.
All right.
Goodbye.
See you next time. All right, well, thanks for listening to the Epic Show. I hope you enjoyed it. And if we missed anything, please, filmthugs@gmail.com. Join us on Facebook. Check out thefilmthugs.com. We need your support. We need your love. It's sad. But join us next time. We're looking at soundtracks and scores. Audio-wise, we have The Godfather, Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, Dr. Zhivago, Patton, and The Man Who Would Be King. Playing under Faith No More's Epic. Right now, you should be hearing... Iron Maiden's The Clansman, an epic song about epic Scotland in an epic way. So thanks for joining. Catch you next time. I'm not afraid to
out. And if we end a race that is part of a clan, to live on our lands with the air that you breathe, so pure and so clean, when alone in the hills, with alone in your hair, with alone. It's a time when you die, and without asking why, can't you see what they do? They're grinding us down, they're taking our land that belongs to the clans. Not alone with a dream, just a want to be free, with a need to belong. I am a clansman.
Oh, That's it. Please stay for the end credits. If you're wondering who the best boy is, it's someone's nephew. Don't forget to validate your parking. And for all of you good people in the Midwest, sorry we said fuck so much. Say goodnight.
Thanks again.
Now go. Vanish.
Spread it on!